There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Thursday, live from Washington, D.C. at the Phoenix Park Hotel for the Federation for American Immigration Reform's Hold Their Feet to the Fire event, and we're doing this live over the next 2 hours from here in D.C. Congressman Bradley Byrne will join us, I think. Now things have moved around a whole bunch. It's been something being here in D.C. By the time I got here, I guess the news was out on Tuesday, Speaker Pelosi calling for the impeachment proceedings to go on, and with that, it's been kind of it's energized the city, but it has a lot of politicos that were going to be on the show. They switching schedules and doing all those kind of things. So hopefully, we'll have the congressman on in hour number two of the show, and we'll talk about that coming up in just about an hour. All right, a couple things I want to do here, and I'd love to talk to you about it as well. Did you get a chance to watch any of this McGuire testimony there in front of Schiff and others in the House? I saw Alabama's Terry Sewell as well in the questioning, and it's a lot like, Dalton, we've talked about in the past, when you have politicos ask questions they don't want answers to. They just want to be on the record for asking the question, because the same question was asked 15, 20, 35 times during the proceedings. And this is this idea of linking. You have somebody who is in a position who does their job, who's a public servant, who is a career government employee, says, well, I do this because this is the nature of the job. And then you have members of the elected class here asking, well, why did you do that? Why did you want to do that? What was your motivation? And they say, well, that's procedure. And then you have the next person ask the same question and the same question, the same question. So, I mean, we can get into this. And also, I do want to kind of roll through what we know is fact and what is actually just conjecture at this point, because I think it's a fair thing to go through, almost doing a fact sheet here for the whistleblower complaint. And because a lot of what I see on social media right now, some of it is factual, some of it is conjecture. Now we'll say, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you're right. It's, you know, both sides want to create their own narrative going in. And that's even before the person who's supposed to be, you know, honest, the Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire. I know the hearing started at 8 o'clock our time this morning, but it seemed like, you know, for the first 30 minutes on the screen up here in the studio, it was just the politicians talking, and the, mm-hmm. you know, the Chiron underneath the video said politicians provide opening statements leading into Joseph McGuire's testimony. You know, this, it's not a debate. They're supposed to be questioning this guy, and like you said, they do the 5 minutes, and a lot of times you'll get 4.5 minutes of the politicians talking, and then they'll ask a question. If the answer to their question doesn't rise to the standard that they're hoping for, then they just move on quickly. And, you know, we've seen this dog and pony show so many times out of Washington that it's impossible to know who's honest and who to trust anymore.
Well, but you listen to McGuire, and what McGuire's doing is talking about the directives that he can within his job and within the scope of his job. I think it's very defensible what he's done. He's not actually in any kind of protection mode. This is not a Lewandowski thing. He is just, he's saying, well, this is what I do. They'll say, well, did you talk to the president about this and that? He said, well, you know, my conversation with the president is something that is, you know, that's classified. That's, you know, we're not going to talk about here. Well, did you talk to him about this? I can't tell you whether I did or didn't. I mean, it was a lot of that because that's the nature of the job. I do want to run through a couple things here as we set up the hour, and we'd love to hear from you as well at 343-0106. A couple things. First of all, you had the phone call, and the nature of this phone call, I think at least got some people's attention. Now, getting attention and being something that is at the level of impeachment, that's where I think the disagreement is. Those that say there was nothing here in this phone call that got anybody's attention, we've heard enough now that say there are White House officials who described the conversation that our president had with the president of Ukraine as some parts of it were disturbing. In other words, they started paying attention, said, hey, what's going on here? And they started moving forward with that. At the same time, you have McGuire's testimony as he was speaking earlier. And, you know, he's saying, hey, this is a conversation I had with the president, or I did not have with the president. That is not the nature of my job to go out and explain that. And Schiff, what, 5-6 different times, wouldn't take that for an answer. Also, the question now is the officials moving to another server. I know they're talking about the security, the intel security on that, the information with that call. I don't know if that's a nothing burger on that or that's something to it. We'll talk about that as well. And then what came out as well is more on the Ukrainian president and who initiated this conversation back and forth. I think that is interesting as we go forward. I tell you what, Dalton, let's do this. We're going to run to break. We'll go a little bit early here because we had an interview that we'll be able to get to, I think, coming up in just a second. So let's go to the news break early. We'll come right back. More of Midday Mobile live from the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington for the Fair Hold Their Feet to the Fire event. And we'll take your calls and texts as well at 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Washington, D.C. And we are here at the Fair's Hold Their Feet to the Fire conference and event. And it's been a real treat to talk to people who have been studying and looking at this immigration issue, one we discuss all the time on the show. But now to be able to talk to people that are actually in the process of crafting what might be solutions, might be fixes on that. Theo Wold is joining us here in at the event. And thanks for coming over because you are a special assistant to the president on immigration. So I imagine, I'm just going to guess, you're pretty busy.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for having me on this afternoon. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. And I love this because I started reading about some of this yesterday. And it's in the nerdy stuff that I get into when people just say, hey, we need to stem the tide of people coming to the southern border, people from Central America, from, you know, non-bordering countries. We need to do the wall, but we need to disincentivize. This is the stuff I'm into. Let's talk about how you do that. I mean, it's a challenge right now that we've made some improvement on, but still record numbers of people coming to our southern border.
Well, I mean, the starting place I say is you gotta remember, your audience has to remember, that there was never a divine mind or a single sort of authorial hand that gave us the immigration system we've got today.
Okay.
It was the accumulation of bad policy after bad policy, intervening regulation, and then of course court orders and court demands from activist judges. So the president came into this situation trying to spin gold out of straw, right? And for the large part, he's done that. He's taken really poor tools, and he's produced some meaningful change, especially in the border zone with our border with Mexico. The problem is that's not a lasting, durable solution. As we saw with the Obama administration, a Democrat can come into office and basically turn off the entire enforcement machinery of the federal government overnight.
That was always a worry when President Trump had to use executive action. I said, that's only good for as long as he's president of the United States.
That's exactly right. Only good insofar as he's president of the United States, and only good insofar as the American people demand that kind of outcome, right? So when you start from the clock at 2016, the American people had a clear expectation what they wanted from their elected leaders when it came to immigration. We had a historical moment, and now the president is operating and trying to build upon the 2016 moment and create a lasting, durable solution to this problem.
So how do you do that? You talk about durability, and people will think physical structures, and we'll talk about the wall and all that, but also there have to be policy changes that somehow can be codified that disincentivize coming here in the first place. I mean, the wall is, you have to stem the tide, but then how do you keep people from thinking it's a good idea to cross the border illegally to be here.
Yeah, you know, so the first thing that's really important is, you're right, durability means not just the infrastructure, the built infrastructure along the border. It also means the built infrastructure of our law.
Right.
Right now, we've basically got, you know, as Senator Cotton likes to say, ollie, oxen-free is our legal system. Mm-hmm. You touch American soil, you're going to get a whole suite of adjudicatory rights and processes that, in many instances, American citizens don't get when they're going through the criminal justice system. And that perverse incentive has been magnified and amplified by the immigration advocacy groups and their lawyers in Central America, South America, throughout the world. The one thing everyone's got to keep in mind is it's not a secret how to game America's immigration system.
Right.
We, as everyday people, paying our mortgages, working 9 to 5, we don't have time to go through the INA, the Immigration and Naturalization Act, passed way back in the 60s and amended over the years. It's thousands and thousands of pages. You got to have a law degree to make any sense of it. But the immigration advocacy groups, they are lawyers. They're immigration lawyers. They know where all the vulnerabilities, the holes, the perverse incentives in our systems are. And they get that word out to people around the world. So it's not a secret how to game our system. And what we're trying to do instead, the usual Republican approach in the past to the immigration system has been, you know, a really nifty slogan. What do we want? Border security. You ask a lot of Republicans what that means,
mm-hmm.
they'll get sidetracked real quick and say, well, it's about hiring more people and spending more money. And I know your listeners would say, when has the federal government spending more money ever produced a solution we like? Right? So the answer can't just be more boots, more personnel, more federal employees, or more money. The answer's got to be, let's look at the law. Take the law down to the studs and rewrite it or reconstruct it so it actually works for the American people. And we think we're onto something because we don't look to any temporary moment. We're not looking at a changing circumstance. Our lodestar here is the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Article 1, Section 8 makes it very plain that Congress needs to create an orderly pathway for naturalization. Everything sort of stems from there. Everything grows out of that lodestar. When you have the Constitution as your basis, then you can start to understand, what does it mean to have fundamental law that people can hold accountable?
Here's what I see, though. This is, whether it's immigration or anything else in our system, there's so many layers of old paint on things that, mm-hmm. that those things become the new reality, even though there's something that has amended and changed the primary principles of our nation. They now have become, that's kind of the thing. Well, that's the way it's always done. That's the way. And then you have different groups that have, you know, sacred cows here. And Republicans also, I've chastised many times that over the Bush years and before, there was a motivation for Republicans to be very soft on this. And this is why I'm talking about a physical structure and also a way to, through law, and through lack of jobs, disincentivize coming here.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're exactly right. When you look at the chronology over the last 30 years, a lot of people had every interest in mind except for the interest of the American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Popular sovereignty, the idea that the people here should govern through their consent, that was lost in between doing the horse trading and the usual DC calculus. The thing you got to keep in mind about the president is he's not a politician. He's the president of the United States. He's not a politician. Really, at root, he's a builder.
Mm-hmm.
And builders never look at a problem set and say, I'm going to go with that. That's the answer. That's the mosaic tablet that came down from the mountain. No, a builder will say, give me all the possible solutions to the problem. Give me all the schematics. Give me several architectural renderings. Give me all the engineering drawings you've got. And then we're going to see how I can maximize my value and produce the best solution, the best building long term. That's how the president's approached this. And so what that means in practice is he's thinking anew about the problem. Most D.C. politicians, they learn lines. They got their talking points, just like an actor learns lines. Tell me where to stand, and I'll just recite the lines. They've never actually thought through the problem set. They're not invested in seeing, well, okay, can we make adjustments here? Can we disincentivize this kind of behavior with this legal tool? And they get most of their talking points from their sacred cows. And so that's why there's been sort of this deadlock. The 2016 forward, the president brings a new energy, a new vision of how to address this problem set. And what we need now is the American people to go to all members of Congress and say, why aren't you thinking about this differently?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because this is a heavy lift that you need pretty much you need bipartisan support, but for sure you need the Republicans to stand with the president. And all these subtle versions of, you just said it, you ask, what does border security mean? What does immigration reform mean? Well, it kind of means this, and that means this other thing. Somebody goes, no, I disagree with you. It means this over here. There has to be, it means this.
And that's,
do you agree with this thing? This is a concept that it's sovereignty. It is the person coming across the border has broken the law. They are an illegal immigrant. They have broken American law. Do you all agree with that and get them to agree?
Yeah, and that's why getting into a fight about paying for, you know, more federal employees or spending more money. The money will always be promised but will never be delivered. We know that. Right. But when you say, no, this isn't a conversation about appropriations, not a conversation about money. This is a conversation about changing the statute, the law mm-hmm. of this country. Then people either say, okay, well, you know, if you change the law that way, maybe it will produce this effect or that effect. We can have that argument. We can have that discussion. And we think we've done the research to show that the way we want to change the law will produce the outcomes we think it will. But you can have that debate. You can't have the debate of saying, well, I'm completely agnostic about that, which most politicians in D.C. want to say, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to touch that discussion. I don't want to go there. If the American people demand, no, it's clear. You either change the law or you don't. Do you want an olly-olly oxen-free legal system where someone just touches American soil and they get to go through full adjudication? Or do you want a sensible asylum system?
Right.
I mean, you know, the asylum system is a great example because the American people, and this is something that's not said enough, are the most generous people on the face of the planet.
Sure.
We extend the protection of our law and our taxpayers-backed resources to people who have no connection to this country only because they're facing, you know, genocide, extermination, intolerance in their home countries. A lot of other people know, though, that we're extremely generous,
mm-hmm.
and they will come and seek benefits they're not entitled to. And when they do that, they're taking up valuable spots that should go to people who really need the protection of our laws. Right. So the president says, you either have a sensible, generous, fair asylum system, or you've got the chaos and the disorder we have now. That should be a straightforward conversation for the American people to say, I can read their bill.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what they're trying to do. It's consistent with our values. We want to be generous. We want to take care of people who actually need our help. Sure. But we want a law that actually is a law that will be enforced in a meaningful way. What are you offering? You're just offering the same chaos and dysfunction we've got today. We think we can win that argument, but of course, as always, it's got to come with the support of the American people.
Well, I think it will if you bring something in front of the American people that is what you're talking about and that we can see it. Almost, we're going to write it on the big whiteboard behind us here and write it how, you know, here it is, here's line one, here's line two, here's what happens in this situation. If the American people see that, I think the American people will then challenge their representatives, their senators, Are you in or are you out on this? And it's at that point, it's not a nuanced discussion like so much in politics. It's a pretty direct one.
Yeah, and so, you know, one thing that's really unique about the president is he empowers his staff to really chase the problem set down to its core. So we've spent months looking at the economic research, the sociological research, all the data sets, sitting with other nations, talking to them about what are their best practices, how do they do this. No nation does it perfectly,
right.
But a lot of other countries do it a lot better than we do.
Well, we can probably learn, take this from over here, this from there.
Exactly. And taking best practices and then adapting it to what is the most complex economy and the most sophisticated legal system in the world and bringing it home so that it works for the American people. That's where the president's unique. Most presidents in the past have just said, you know, get me a document, put it together, recycle the same regurgitated ideas and put a new label on it, make it look glossy and cool, and we'll call it policy, right? What we're doing instead is really taking it down, as I said at the outset, to the studs. And rebuilding the house. The American people, I think, are going to see that what we've built is reflective, again, of their principles as a free people under a constitution. It's reflective of their humanitarian generosity informed by our Judeo-Christian basis as a country, that we take care of people who need help. But there's limitations to our generosity, right?
Right.
So it's reflective of their principles. It's reflective of our form of government. And it's written in plain English so they can hold their members of Congress accountable. No Trojan horses here.
Good.
No hoodwinking. Nothing secreted in the language. It's all there there in plain daylight.
That's it. And that will be great to see, because I think when the American people see that, then they can put the pressure. There is no way to dodge or move around the issue as a politician. Say, well, kind of, you don't understand this. If it's put in the language we can all read, the support comes.
That's right. And then also getting out all of the information that backs up the what's written in the text, right? Because that's another thing people do. They'll say, well, you don't know the data.
Uh-huh.
You don't know the economic statistics like I do. I'm an economist, right? And so what we have also done is built up all of that research so we can give it to you all, the American people. You can read through it. You can say, oh, it turns out, you know, legal immigrants, we're not talking about illegal immigrants, but legal immigrants have diminished opportunity over the last 10, 20, 30 years. They're not getting into the middle class either. And some of them are taking U.S. jobs, sure, and they're undercutting our wages, but then they're stuck in intergenerational poverty like the rest of us. So clearly something's wrong with our system. The people in D.C. want to hide most of these facts. They want to keep this from the American people so that they don't look under the hood and say, this isn't an engine. This is fake.
Right. This is something, timeline-wise, we'll be talking about when.
So we're looking to get this out in the next couple of months.
Okay.
But here's the thing. So we did a soft launch back in May. A lot of people have said, well, you've been silent on this. We haven't been silent. What we've done since May is we got hit, as the president always does, with smears, with fake attacks from, you know, the left-wing policy minds. What the last few months have allowed us to do is build up rebuttals and tighten our fortifications against all those arguments, so that members of Congress who run scared in this issue says,
because they will.
Every time. They don't have an excuse. We've seen the arguments, and now we have responses to each one. When people say we're anti-family, no, we're not. We're pro-immediate family. We believe in the reunification of the nuclear family. You can't bring your entire village or community here.
Right.
But we're pro-family. We want better outcomes for American families and legal immigrants who come here. People say, well, this would be harmful for the economy. No, it won't. Every country that's moved to a points-based system like we're proposing has seen economic opportunity increase. They say in Australia, they've basically been recession-proof for 3 decades when they moved to an immigration system that didn't undercut wages. It was complementary to their existing workforce and put upward pressure on everyone's wages. So we've got arguments for all of the usual canards that people will say or use to justify why they're not doing anything to reform our immigration system. We've got the research to back it up, and really ultimately when people say, well, what are you going to do with House Democrats?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that question is we're going to beat them with better ideas. If they come to the table, fine. If they don't, then we'll take this case to the American people. And for once, the Republican Party will have something they can unify behind and articulate in a clear way. And we will avoid the trap of the healthcare fight, where we had a great slogan, repeal and replace,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have any substantive details. Now we've got a great slogan, and we've got the details so that January 1, 2021, we can put this in place.
Yeah, this is not just saying the immigration system is failed. This is saying it's failed, and here's how to fix it. Am I right in saying that, Theo?
Yeah, I mean, look, like, you don't have to be a clairvoyant or an oracle to find someone on the street who will tell you America's immigration system is broken. You know, from a CEO to the guy working the line at the local factory, everyone knows our system is broken. That's not rocket science.
Right, there's not a heavy lift to achieve that.
No, not at all. Yeah. The hard part is saying, here's how we can fix it in a way that doesn't undercut our Constitution, doesn't undermine our sovereignty, and doesn't displace American workers, and doesn't end up decreasing their wages. What we've designed is the opposite. Protect American sovereignty, enshrine the Constitution, affirm the American worker, and improve their wages in the long term.
Special Assistant to President Trump, Theo Wold, thank you for your time. Thank you for your work on this, and we'll be watching this.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, coming right back, more Midday Mobile. We are live in Washington at the Phoenix Park Hotel for Fares Hold Their Feet to the Fire event, and be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. We are live for the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. for the Federation of American Immigration Reform, the FAIR event. And this is the 13th year they've done this event, the Hold Their Feet to the Fire. And it was good to talk to Theo Wold, Special Assistant to President Trump. And he's going to join us again in the future when they get ready to roll out the details of the immigration plan and how to deal with a bunch of different parts of this. We talked a little bit off the air, and he's kind of a wonky person like me. I'm interested in talking with him because we're going to get into some detail on this. So he's going to join us on the show in the next couple weeks or so. We'll get him on and talk more about, I'd say next couple months, probably within 60 days. Get him on. All right, this is something, the story when I saw this of, number one, y'all know that I guess because they're ranchers, I'm interested, and because they're on the border and the front lines of this debate and the reality of illegal immigrants crossing the border, I was directed to say, you know, I need to get these folks on. And Peggy Davis, and I'm sorry, introduce yourself again.
I'm Peggy's daughter, Marlo Compton.
Marlo and Peggy. Y'all are ranchers right down in the areas where we're all talking about the wall. We're talking about the flow of, this is where y'all live.
Yes.
This is your everyday.
Yes. We are 25 miles north of the border, so we don't personally have a fence, a border fence on our property. But you'd think that in 25 miles you wouldn't have a problem. But the majority of the Border Patrol is north of me.
Wait. Y'all are south of where the patrol is.
Yes.
Why wouldn't the Border Patrol be south of you?
Well, because they have a strategy that they call defense in depth. And the majority of the agents are north of me to create an atmosphere, if you will, that they have hours and days to catch immigrants instead of seconds and minutes. If that makes any sense to you, help me out.
Yeah, it does, because it doesn't.
It's been enforced since the mid-90s. It doesn't work. It never has, and it never will. And no, you've never heard of it.
I'm baffled to why you would let them get it into the United States any further before you went and tried to catch. It seems like it'd be easier to catch where everybody's in one place before they're spread out, you know, in latitude, let alone longitude.
Well, maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist at heart, but we've been through 14, 15 Tucson Sector Border Patrol chiefs in the years that we've been fighting this problem, which is around 30 years. So they change pretty often. And in the year 2000, the Tucson Sector Chief at that time, his name was David Aguilar. And he later became the commissioner of the Border Patrol under President Obama. He was the originator, if you will, or the mastermind of the defense in depth strategy, came to my home in the year 2000 with some agents from San Diego and some agents from El Paso, and wanted to talk to some border ranchers in Arizona, where at that time it was the worst of anywhere in the country. And he said, well, because Operation Gatekeeper and Operation Hold the Line worked so well in San Diego and in El Paso, because they put agents right on the border.
Okay, all right. So,
but they're cities.
So I'm waiting to see how they explain this to you, Peggy.
It makes no sense still.
I'm sure you see the look on my face.
You're going to have crickets just like I did. And so they were going to force this traffic into Arizona, thank you very much, and they would then secure the cities, because that's where the voters are.
Mm-hmm.
And they would force those illegals into the rural areas and place their deployment into the interior to give them time to catch these people. And I said at the time, why would you do that? What did we do to you?
Right.
Why?
They basically told you that y'all are bait. Y'all are not being defended.
Are the sacrificial lamb. And they had decided in their brilliance that illegals would not cross into the desert country and the more mountainous terrain, that they would not do it, so they could just catch them, just pluck them off. Well, they went everywhere. They went over mountaintops. They went everywhere they needed to go.
That's what I wanted you to do when we first started talking. Describe folks to folks back home. We're along the Gulf Coast. They're right on the Gulf of Mexico. But describe what it looks like where y'all ranch. What's that country look like?
Well, we're Arizona's high desert. People people don't realize that the altitude gets higher as you get go south. So we're at 4,600 feet there. And the major rivers run out of Mexico into the United States from south to north.
Okay.
So it creates a bit of a problem along rivers where we have illegal trafficking because you can't block the river in the summer rainy season. So they have to lift the floodgates on the border wall that we have south of us. And for months during rainy season, the gates are lifted. They're as big as that wall. You could drive, and they did drive trucks through there, because the trash would back up on the on the south side. So they'd open the gates, and the water would come through, and so would all the illegals. And there's no agents there protecting that spot because they're north of me.
There's nothing between you and the border.
Well, there's a few.
I mean, a few agents down there somewhere.
A few agents. But if you asked, let's say you had the Border Patrol Council in here, and you may.
Right.
They're going to tell you, well, we're on the border. But that same man, David Aguilar, that I told you about, made the statement, and he believes this. It's printed in the Arizona Republic, that the border is not a defined line in the dirt. It's a corridor between the United States and Mexico. So we live in that corridor, 25, 35 miles.
There is a there are defined lines to nations. I mean, it's
not according that. That's why the council will tell you, well, we're on the border. They are considering that big corridor as the border.
So they've sat in your home and said, "Hey, we're going to be north of you."
Yeah,
we're going to be north of you.
Yeah, because you live in a rural area. We're going to be north of you.
So you described this high desert where y'all live, and that the people the assumption was they would not go through the arroyos or not go through over the mountains or something like that.
They won't go over the rough terrain. They, you know, and of course all of us said, well, yeah, they will.
Somebody who has walked 1,000 miles to get there, what the heck does it matter going over, I mean, over through a ranch, through the mountain? I mean, they've already gone through desert. They've already gone through.
Yes, and I feel like it's all a very carefully strategized plan to have open borders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they justify it. That's my feeling. I mean, this guy was appointed by Obama. So what does that tell you?
So what is it? I mean, but what is it like? Describe to folks back home when you find people on the ranch. Is it just, I mean, do you see people walking around? Do they, what is that like? Like a day in that? I mean, do you see people just out going through through some rangeland or what?
We used to every day. I mean,
every day.
Marlo can tell you about that.
Or you would just see some people
ago,
on the ranch.
Yes, every day. Every single day.
But it changed over time. When I was, and this is something my parents have been fighting for 30 years. When I was a little kid, the people that were coming across were the people that the media tries to convince you that they are today.
People looking for a better life.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. That's who was coming when I was a little kid.
Okay.
My parents fed every single one of them. I remember being about 4 years old and my mom sending me with food out on the front porch to give to some men that were crossing through. And you wouldn't do that with your four-year-old to somebody you didn't know if you were too worried, right?
Right.
Well, things changed. And when we got massive numbers of them, and then they became smuggling drugs and humans and not just those people looking for a better life, things changed. I mean, when I was in high school, I was no longer around that age, you know, 12, 13 and older, no longer able to kind of roam free because there were those people walking around everywhere. I mean, I've opened the barn door to go feed the horses and there's 13 men laying in there asleep.
Don't think about that for a second. Don't think about that for a second. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, open the door to our barn or going, you know, if my children want to go to another pasture, then I wouldn't back home in Alabama. I wouldn't. Okay. Go down there.
You know,
y'all remember close the gate when you come back and that, but to have people every day coming through that are now dangerous elements, and you can't let your child, you live on a ranch like that, and you can't let your child play outside.
Well, no. And after Marlo was married, she lived in Colorado for a time, and my son was in college at the New Mexico State University. My husband had left for about 9 weeks to work on a movie set in Texas, and I was there by myself during the height. For 9 weeks, one summer, I was there myself taking care of that ranch. And every single night we had illegals coming through the ranch. My dogs would go crazy, and they were there every single night. And you can't live in fear in your own property all the time. And
what, I mean, but what happens if the dogs go barking, you see out there, here comes, and you get on the phone and call Border Patrol?
They're not going to come unless there's more than maybe 10.
Wait a second. It's a volume deal. It has to be enough that makes it worth. So if it's less than 10 or something, they'll say, all right, well, what, duly noted, we're not coming?
We'll get there as soon as we can, and it might. In one case, we had drug runners come in one night and abandoned vehicles, and here came the Border Patrol. Nobody tells us what's going on. I said, man, I see lights down the road, and what's going on? And my husband calls the Border Patrol, and they said, yeah, I think we ran into some drug runners onto your property there, but we're on their trail. And my husband said, no, they just went into my barn. Oh, no, they...
This is the stuff to hear your stories, to be at your home, and there are people not only coming through, but into your structures.
And the next morning, they walk out with their rifles right in front of our house, and my husband calls, and he said, you didn't show up last night. I told you where they were, and you couldn't be bothered, and now today they're walking out of my barn.
And they're armed, too, so, I mean, why... You know, you can be as tough as you know the day is long, but if there's a dozen men out there with rifles, you're not gonna. I wouldn't engage them either.
No. It's like that 9-week period that I was there by myself. You know, I prayed a lot, and I got one of those sound machines, and I locked myself in at night, and I turned that up to the. Ocean setting,
right?
And I laid my gun beside me and went to sleep. You have to find a way to, you know, to exist in that climate. Where we don't have that problem right now doesn't mean that there aren't dangerous people there. They're just more.
What are you seeing these days? Give us the last couple months. What's it been like? Is summertime? They stay. Is it more of a wintertime thing? You don't see them.
It'll be more, and as soon as it cools off,
okay,
we're going to have more. It is pretty seasonal. We don't see any anymore.
Do you see sign of them? You cut tracks and see where they've been.
Sometimes, and then sometimes I just know. I mean, I know when my dogs see them and hear them and smell them, and all of the above. You can tell that they're barking.
But it obviously has slowed down.
It's slowed down in our area, but I wouldn't say it's partly because it slowed down big time when Trump was elected. They self took care of themselves and just stayed away for a while.
We have big numbers still coming. You know, the numbers we're given that are hitting the border.
We do, mostly in Texas.
Right.
One of the reasons we have a really good governor. So New Mexico's getting hit really hard because they have a real soft governor, and she's just letting them come in. And our governor is strict, and he's given a whole lot of money to our Cochise County Sheriff. And so it's not the federal government that's helping us. It's our governor and our sheriff.
Well, thank you for your stories. This is amazing to think what you're dealing with. Hopefully, you won't have to have a sound machine to go to sleep anymore, and you just, it's worth the beauty of living on a ranch. And
there's no dogs barking here.
Don't worry. I'll get my phone, and we'll get my dogs and let them bark for you. It'll be a good thing. Thank you for your time. Hey, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. We are live from the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington for Fair's Hold Their Feet to the Fire event. What do you think about that? Now, think about that. Look out to a barn and think about people in your barn all night long and then waiting for them to leave at daylight. Wow. Okay, could be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And we are live from Washington, D.C. for Fair's Hold Their Feet to the Fire event. Interesting. A lot of conversation going on here. And to come up on the show, I think Congressman Bradley Byrne is going to join us here in a little bit. And we'll get into a conversation with him about what Alabama's, because I've got some numbers for you, too. Immigration numbers for our state. Not near as much as something like somebody like a Peggy Davis who lives in Arizona. But what are the numbers for Alabama? I'll get into that coming up in just a little bit. Now I want to check in back at home with my buddy Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company. Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
I'm good. I'm in D.C. and wondering what's going on back home. Y'all got another cool event coming up at Fairhope Brewing.
Tonight's event is going to be at the Bluegill Restaurant, featuring a collaboration beer that we did with a bunch of the other breweries down here.
Tell me about it. What's the deal?
Yeah, it's we partnered up with Iron Hand, Serta Brewing, Old Majestic, Braided River, and Big Beach, who are a bunch of the breweries down in Mobile and Baldwin County, to brew a IPA that is going to benefit Alabama Coastal Foundation.
Okay, so how does that work when y'all all get together? I mean, is it like fighting like they're doing up here in Washington, or what is it like when there's that many breweries working together?
Well, I think we're all on the same side of the aisle together, more or less. So we get along pretty well. We kind of put together an email chain with some recipe ideas and things like that. That everybody went back and forth. We came up with a recipe we really like. Beer turned out really, really, really solid. I think everybody's going to like it. And we're having the first release tonight at Bluegill down there on the Causeway at 6:00. And then after that, you'll be able to get it in our tap room, and we'll have it in 16-ounce cans around different stores in Mobile and Baldwin County.
What's the name of the beer again?
The beer is called Friends in Low Places.
Okay.
That's what we are down here in Lower Alabama.
You're always good with the jokes. All right, so that is being debuted. Tonight's a debut, but when did you say you'll start having them at the tap room, and where can we get them?
Yeah, we'll have it available in the tap room starting tomorrow. And then next week it'll be in draft in bars and restaurants all over the place. And we also have four packs of 16-ounce cans that'll be out at grocery stores, convenience stores, as much as we can get it spread out. And I think it's going to be good. I think people are really going to like it. I think it's going to be a really fun event tonight. And all the breweries will be there. So a good chance to maybe meet everybody all at one time if you haven't gotten the chance yet.
Yeah, and there, I mean, obviously there's a couple of y'all I know personally, but there's some you listed here that I'd, Old Majestic, Braided River, Big Beach. I need to meet some of these folks.
Yeah, Big Beach guys, they were the second ones open in Baldwin County. They've been open about a little over 3 years, I believe, and Braided River and Old Majestic are close to opening. Old Majestic should be within about a month, and Braided River is open by the end of the year. So we even let in a few of the guys there that are still working everything out, but we're there to support them.
Hey, Brian, you mentioned, too, this is to benefit Alabama Coastal Foundation. What is, like, your slug line? What do they do?
They basically help protect our waterways down in our area. And they do a lot of recycling programs. They do an oyster shell recycling program, I know, is one of their big things. They do various Connect to Your Coast events is one of their big year-round kind of projects they do, where they host events in various areas to inform people about our area and our coast and keeping the water in good shape. And most important ingredient for making beer is actually water. So that's it's important to all of us as well.
That's a good deal, man. Well, I appreciate y'all are always getting involved in cool events and helping out, and I want folks to come out tonight. So the Bluegill tonight, starting when?
Starting at 6:00 at Bluegill.
All right, good stuff. Best of luck, and we'll see you soon.
I appreciate you squeezing me in, man. You have fun up there.
Well, Brian Kane from Fairhope Brewing Company joining us, and we're coming right back. Next hour, we're going to be talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne. He's going to join us here. He has made the walkover from the House, where I know they're busy with votes, but he's going to join us for a little bit to talk about some immigration, but obviously talk about everything that's going on right now with the Democrats in the House moving for this impeachment of President Trump, plus what may happen going forward here for the Senate, what he thinks those people and the austere body of the Senate may do on this. And plus, we'll get your questions answered, too. You can always hit us up on the text line, which is 343-0106, 343-0106. And we're coming right back live at the Phoenix Park Hotel in Washington for FAIR's Hold Their Feet to the Fire event on FM Talk 106.5.